for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer period. If you'd like to ask a question at that time, please press star then one. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I'm turning over to Mr. Don Dischinger. You may begin.
Hi, thank you, and thank you everyone for joining today's call on TSM sizing concepts with the TSM Sizer. With us today, we have Tom Heppner joining us, who will take you through the mechanics of actually sizing up a TSM opportunity. And the reason we're going through this today on this call is because we are piloting a capacity or a terabyte model for pricing of TSM. And that pilot's running this quarter and next quarter. What we're trying to do is re-educate the sales force, and primarily the technical sales force, into how to estimate how much storage needs to go into a storage pool that TSM would be managing, because this is what the capacity model is based upon. So this is something that we had done as technical people years ago when we had a different pricing model. And what we're kind of doing is revisiting this concept of how do we estimate, for a brand new TSM customer, how would we estimate how much data they would be storing in TSM after a period of time. So that's what Tom's going to take you through. We're going to, at the end of today's call, we're going to have a question and answer period where we'll be able to answer your questions both on the sizing tool and any questions you might have around pricing if you have them. And with that, I will turn this over to Tom Heppner.
Thank you, Don. As Don mentioned, my name's Tom Heppner. I'm with the Advanced Technical Skills Group within IBM, our group. There's four of us, Randy Larson, David Down, and David Cannon, and myself. And not to confuse David Cannon with the David Cannon that's in Tucson, who's also in TSM development. But our team is dedicated specifically to TSM and everything related to that product. I've been with the product since about 1992 and in this group since 1995, so I've been working on it for quite a while. If you all have your presentation, I'm on the agenda page. We're gonna go over some general sizing factors in terms of TSM, just a page on the network, and then we'll spend some time with the disk and the tape pools for TSM and their specific idiosyncrasies. Then we're going to talk a little bit about the TSM database and the recovery logs. And when I say recovery logs, I'm referring to both version 5 and version 6 in the concept there, even though the recovery logs have changed fairly drastically for version 6. And then I'm going to touch on using the TSM sizer. And by the way, we're still working out some details on getting that distributed, so I can't announce that date right at this point, but we'll get to that shortly. Moving on to basic TSM sizing factors, you really have to look at the entire environment because TSM just touches everything. And by the way, I'm gonna open up for questions about three quarters of the way through when we get through these general sizing questions, so you'll be able to ask your questions in just a few minutes. So as I mentioned, you need to gather some data, and it needs to be gathered accurately in order for you to get some accurate results in terms of sizing. I mentioned that TSM really touches every part of the environment, so on the client machines, as TSM would know them, which actually owns the data that we're managing. Everything from the disk that the actual production data resides on, back through the network, into the TSM server, and onto whatever the mass storage device is, whether it be disk, tape, VTL, optical, whatever it might be. Any of those components from end to end could and will be a factor in terms of sizing, especially in terms of performance, but specifically the things that will determine the amount of space required will be found both on the TSM client side and a few things on the TSM server side as well. Now, I also wanted to mention not to confuse this sizing activity that we're going to do today with data availability. So a lot of times I get asked about when we're talking about sizing, whether or not specific pieces of data or individual files, how long they will be available. Now, while the copy pool parameters are significant, remember, we're here to talk about the amount of space needed to hold all of this data, and we're not talking about specific the specific retention of individual files or groups of data. So try and keep that in mind as we go through this. We're going to talk about retention periods and versions, but it doesn't relate to any specific data in this case. Okay, so moving on to the sizing factors on the next page, and I apologize for not adding the numbers on the presentation. You really should start with whatever the business requirements for the customer may be. So that's where these sizing requirements should come from. So whether or not the sizing requirements are from a pure business perspective or from some government regulation, those are the things that should drive this thing, not the amount of space that may be available or that somebody can afford. The sizing should be done appropriately for the business case. Okay, first of all, frequency. How often are things backed up? Whether are they backed up every day, every week, every month, once a year? You know, that's the frequency is the number one thing you should think about. The second thing is the number of copies kept. You know, within TSM, there's a basic concept of backups and archives, and the way TSM distinguishes between those two things. A backup is something that can change throughout its life. So let's say you're an architectural firm and you're working on a set of drawings. A particular drawing may change several times through the course of its life, so you're going to want to have different versions. However, once a particular design is complete, and it's kind of locked and shouldn't be changed, then that could be backed up, that should be sent to the TSM server possibly as an archive because it's never going to change again. Also, think about your income tax document that goes to the government. That document, once it's complete, will never change. So we would call that an archive. So, we're going to have multiple versions of backups, but an archive will have a single version. So try and keep that in mind, because if I talk about backup, most of the times I'm talking about backup and archive. So, but they can have a difference in terms of the number of versions. Now, the next thing we want to talk about is retention period. Now, this is that time period that TSM is going to keep a particular document or object in the TSM storage pools and in the TSM database. Now, of course, everything that goes to a TSM storage pool is kept track of in the TSM database. The only exception to that at this point are TSM backup sets, which are kind of a little bit of an odd duck. So those individual backup sets aren't tracked in the same way as other objects are for TSM. And I'm sure if you're familiar with those, you know what I'm talking about. Finally, I mentioned here on this note the TSM copy group. Now, I've included in the speaker notes there of your presentation a complete description of what I mean by copy group. The copy group is the part in TSM where these things are defined. It's a part of the management class and there's specific definitions for the retention periods, the number of versions that exist, and number of versions that are deleted. For instance, if you have some files that are backed up on a client system, and then those files are deleted, there's a parameter within TSM that keeps track of how many copies of files that have been deleted from a client system, how long, and how many versions are kept on the TSM server. So if you have any specific details on that, you can ask them later, or you can also look in that documentation there. Okay, let's go on to the volume of data and the factors that you have to think about for sizing. Daily incrementals, as I mentioned, those things are going to probably change daily. But the nature of incrementals, what that means is TSM is going to back up any file on the client system that is not excluded by the include-exclude list on the client. So you should be familiar with those terms if you're not. There's a way that you can go in and tell TSM not to back up specific files and or directories. So there's a way that you can exclude things. Anything else is going to be backed up at least once, and depending on what your copy group parameters are, you're going to keep one or more copies of that. Now, the way things work within TSM, a second copy or a second version is only going to be backed up if that copy changes, if we're talking about incremental backup. Of course, you can force multiple backups in a couple of different ways, but for the incremental forever paradigm, it's only going to get one copy if that file never changes. So that means that all of the operating system files that are on your system that don't change, those are only going to have one copy. There's also going to be other files on your system that don't change. So over the course or over the entire data set that is on any given machine, there's going to be a specific group of files that won't change, so you're only going to get one copy. Now, if we're talking about a client that is taking care of databases, then that's a different story. Those files are probably going to back up every day, and depending on whether it's Oracle DB2 or any other kind of production database, that may be either a file or a full backup, or it could be a differential or some type of incremental backup on the table space level. So that the databases are a little bit different than file system files. In most cases, they're going to be full backups. That could change, but you will know that, or the people that take care of that data will know that information. Okay, so the amount of data that is backed up on a daily basis will go to your will speak. Most directly to the size of your disk pool, assuming that you're backing up directly to disk and then migrating to tape. Now, of course, within TSM, we have the ability of this hierarchical order of storage pool devices so that you can back up to disk and then migrate that data to tape on a daily basis. That's probably the most common way. Except for very large files, as I mentioned with the database files, those files can go directly to tape and are probably the most efficient way to handle that data. So any data that is going directly to disk on a daily basis, that's what we're going to look at to size our the amount of disk that you're going to need on the TSM server for the disk pool. Now, that daily backup and your retention period and the version settings, that's what we have to find out in terms of sizing the tape pool, the number of cartridges, and the actual library size itself. So that's That's what we're going to look at in the future in just a few minutes. Now, understanding, going on to the sizing the network, I mentioned the network only in that if this is a brand new installation, this is one of the things that you need to look at in terms of performance and, more importantly, being able to back everything up in the required backup window that the customer has, both for their client machines and for the TSM server. So on the client, you may have other applications running, and you don't want to impact those adversely with a backup if you can help it. So usually customers will set aside a time period for the backup to run, because many times the backup will impact the production applications. Sometimes it doesn't. Now that machines are much more powerful with a lot more memory, we're not seeing that kind of slowdown during a backup period that we did before. Also, I'll mention that the networks today, we don't see the problems that we did just a few years ago. You know, now that we have these larger pipes to back up in, it's much better. Although we do still see this problem when we're backing across a WAN or a MAN, even a metropolitan area network. We do still see the network as a bottleneck. So it's something to consider. Let's see. I think I covered everything on that sheet. So let's move on to disk pools. Now we're going to determine the backup to disk, which will probably migrate to tape. As I mentioned, the incremental backup of the file system, that will probably go to disk. It's a good candidate of backing up to disk. And the larger files are a good candidate to back up directly to tape. And these days, usually, we're going to back those up with a storage agent across a SAN. One of the ways that we found to tune the number of disk drives that are engaged during the backup window is with an option in your storage pool, or a definition in your storage pool, and it's named max size. So what you can do is you can set that max size to be very large, and then if during your backup window you're not engaging all of your tape drives, you can lower that max size number so that you send your larger files directly to tape. And this does a couple of things for you. It gets your tape drives involved, and so you're using those resources. But then on the other side, it also reduces the amount of data that must be migrated from the disk pool to tape. So you kind of gain in two different ways there. So keep that in the back of your mind when you're setting up your system. So you're going to configure enough disk, hopefully, to handle the entire days or the entire 24-hour period, the backup. What you want to avoid here is running migration during your backup window, because, you know, it's just a physical limitation that you have on those disk drives. If they're trying to read the disk and then write to the disk at the same time, they're going to be less efficient. Also in this process, you want to keep in mind client compression and deduplication from the client side. And we'll just take a word to talk about deduplication. Now with TSM version 6, we have server-side deduplication that you can do natively with TSM. But with version 6.2, you can have client-side deduplication as well, and that's the function that's going to allow you to reduce your disk pool size, is the client-side deduplication. Now, keep in mind that on the server-side deduplication, when data gets moved to the tape, it's going to be rehydrated or undeduplicated, whatever term you want to use. So you're not going to save on your compression or your deduplication with the server-side deduplication. So keep that in mind going forward. Okay, let's go on to talking about tape pools. And I realize that most of this is basic information, but we want to cover everything once for everybody. Okay, so the tape activities that will influence the sizing, number one, the daily backups, direct-to-tape migration, as I've said now three times. Also, the storage pool backup. So once everything is backed up to a storage pool, whether it's disk or tape, you're going to want to make a copy of that in most cases, and that storage pool backup will add to the requirement for tape in most cases. Also, the TSM database backup, depending on how frequently you do that, we recommend to do it at least once a day, probably twice a day, depending on how quickly you want to be able to restore the data in the event of a large disaster. You're going to want to have the most frequent copy of the database available. Also, how you run your reclamation process, and of course that's the process that TSM uses to reduce the overall requirement for cartridges within a library. So it's really important that the reclamation process is run on a daily basis in order to keep that the number of cartridges in the library at a minimum. The other thing that I mentioned that's going to require additional tapes is if you use the backup set feature and generate backup sets for either all your clients or maybe a subset of your clients, say your most important or the clients that must be restored most quickly, can be done so by the use of a backup set. Okay, moving on with more tape pool information. The components that need to be sized here, and this I've referred to many of them, that the number of tape cartridges themselves, also the number of slots within the library, and also the number of drives that you're going to need. So, for instance, you first have to start out with probably the type of tape device you're going to know, because that device is going to have a specific throughput value that it's good for. So you have to start there, and then you have to figure out how much data is going to go to my tape drives in any given period of time. And then you have to come up with a throughput, probably megabytes per second or possibly megabits per second, in order to figure out how many drives you're actually going to need. So that's something you're going to need to think about. Okay, just some best practices in terms of drives on the next slide. We want you to always configure at least two tape drives. There's a couple of different reasons for that. The reclamation process is most efficient when you have at least two tape drives available just for reclamation. And I would only say you would have two tape drives on a very small installation, because you're going to need to be able to run reclamation during the day. You're going to probably back up some backups directly to tape. You're going to need those drives for migration, database backup. There's lots of things that are going to use those tape drives. So anything less than two drives is possible. You can do reclamation with a single drive, but it's much, much slower, much less efficient. So we don't ever recommend that. Also, let's talk about the tape adapters themselves. You need to do a little bit of a calculation and know the adapter speed that's going to be used, and then, of course, the speed of the drives. And it's a pretty simple little bit of math that you have to do in terms of the number of tape devices or tape drives that can be attached to a single adapter. We used to say no more than two or three for performance reasons, but you really need to look at the characteristics of the adapters and the drives that are going to be attached to them. Consider parallelism. Usually the more parallelism you have going, the better throughput you're going to get, so please keep that in mind. In terms of getting, as I mentioned, you want to engage as many of those drives as possible during the day and use those resources that you have at your disposal. Okay, let's move on and talk about the TSM database disk. The version 5 rule of thumb was something like 5% of your total data that's being managed or backed up, including all the versions, of course. So if you're keeping 10 versions, your requirement is going to be much greater than if you're keeping 2 versions. So keep that in mind. We're going to see that more in just a minute. So 5%, 2 to 5% used to be the old number that would be used just as a rule of thumb. With version 6 now, 1.3 to 1.5 times larger is another rule of thumb that was come up, somebody came up with. That number can really go as large as 2 times what a version 5 database would be. Say, for instance, if a client has a lot of really long file names. We see that, by the way, in Germany, where some of the file names and the directory names can be very, very long. There's a more specific way of calculating this number. Let's talk for a minute about database objects that are going to be kept in the TSM database. The object is either the name of the file, the name of the directory, or any other piece of information that's kept within the database to keep track of individual files and directories, permissions, security things like that. So those are objects that we're going to keep track of. Basically, 600 to 1,000 bytes for each backup archive file, 1 to 200 bytes for each copy or active directory object. You have to do that calculation. You're going to need to add additional space for the growth on a yearly basis, so say anywhere from, well, what's typical now is 25 to 50% we're seeing typical growth. Also, you're going to want a little bit of headroom in there in case you have a really high daily backup for whatever reason. So maybe 25% additional space for that. And don't forget to think about mirroring in terms of TSM mirroring or your hardware mirroring that you're going to use to protect that TSM database. So there's a lot of different things to think about, especially when we're talking about version 6 there. And then, of course, the recovery log, or now with version 6, you've got active logs and you've got archive logs. The active logs contain all of the in-flight transactions. Now, a transaction in terms of TSM speak, this is the basic workload that goes on, whether it be a backup or a migration event, a reclamation event. These are all processes that are going on within TSM that TSM has to keep track of in case something happens to interrupt that event. So if a backup starts and starts sending data to a TSM storage pool, if, say, the network is interrupted or if the client machine is interrupted for any reason, TSM has to have the ability to roll back that process, or as we call it, a transaction, so that the database is kept in sync, so that what is in the storage pool it matches everything that's in the TSM database. So we do that by keeping track of the in-flight transactions. Now, the archive logs consists of the active log data that has not been backed up by a TSM database backup. So the archive log is going to keep track of that until the database backup is completed. Then that archive log can be released. So to start off with, the active data space relative to the database space is about half, but we're seeing that this number fluctuates greatly depending on whether you're doing deduplication and whether or not a process called reorganization is going on at any given time. So this is something, as you're setting up space, I would make sure that you have probably double the amount of space for your database that could be for your recovery log space, just in case. So going forward, it's better to have too much space than not enough. So if you just don't have the space, then use that half the database size. I mean, if you can't get any more than that, then I guess you could run like that, but that wouldn't be our recommendation. Okay, let's stop now, and I'll back up on this last slide. Go ahead and open up the phone lines, Jackie, and let's see if we have any questions on just the overall sizing of TSM.
If you'd like to ask a question, please dial star then one at this time.
Like we have a pretty educated group here with us today.
We have one question from Jit Pal. Your line is open.
Hi. Thank you for taking time and presenting this information.
Sure.
One question I have. In new version of 6.2, do we need to perform two TSM database backup before it clean up the log?
Do you have to do two?
TSM data, full TSM database backup. Before it clean up the logs, because it was the requirement in 6.1.
I'll have to take that online. I don't know if that's been changed in 6.2. But I'll find out that, and I'll make sure that the answer goes out to the group.
Okay. And is there any sizing requirement for logs, archive logs? I mean, how do we calculate the space required for archive logs?
Okay, the archive log, the amount of space for the archive logs, the minimum amount is half your database size, and I would say for most production systems, I would double the amount of space that you have for your database, have that same amount of space for your archive logs.
Okay, so if our database grows to 100 gig, we should have 200 gig for archive logs.
No, you should have 100 gig for the archive logs.
Also, same amount, okay.
Same amount, up to that, yes.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
You're welcome.
We have another question from John Otto. Your line is open.
Hi, John. How are you?
Hey, good, Tom. Thanks. Are you going to cover anything about the processor and memory recommendations? I don't know if it was a rule of thumb for 5, but generally we would see like twice the amount of memory per processor for the machines for TSM, for the servers.
Yeah, we're not. I'm going to mark that down. Hardware sizing is a completely different discussion, and we're basically talking about just sizing disc and tape today.
Right. Okay.
But I know that requirement is out there.
All righty. Sure.
And once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please dial star then one at this time.
Hey, Tom, this is Don Dischinger. I did have a question. Is there a rule of thumb for the amount of data reduction you would expect from client-side data deduplication and how that would factor into sizing the pools?
Yeah, that's a good question, and it's a hard one to answer. You know, if you talk to the hardware deduplication folks, they're gonna give you numbers like anywhere from 20 to 50%. Reduction for deduplication. Generally, they'll throw out the number of 25%. But because of the way TSM works, I'm sure, as you know, with the incremental forever and client-side compression, TSM is already reducing the amount of data that gets sent to the TSM server by quite a bit. So the numbers that we're seeing is something around 5 to 10%. For deduplication, but it's just like compression. There's no way to predict what any particular data set is going to do until you try it. Mm-hmm. So that's the rule of thumb that we're going by right now, around 5%. But you won't know until you try it.
So 5%, not 5x. Which one?
I'm sorry. Yeah, 5x.
5X, okay.
Yeah.
That's pretty substantial still, if you think about it, 5 to 10X.
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah. Especially. But again, you got to think about not only the particular client, but you got to think about, you know, what's the nature of all the clients that are going to that same TSM server? You know,
right.
do they have all of the same files on them? And actually the way, of course, deduplication works is it breaks the files up into chunks, and it's those chunks that are compared. So it's not an individual file that has to match. It's those chunks. So,
right.
Yeah.
And perhaps I think maybe I'll chat with you after this call. It might be good to find get some kind of a matrix as to what types of data from specific kinds of applications, as an example, would be more repetitive as far as the chunks are concerned. Which
yes.
ones would benefit more from deduplication. The reason I'm driving at this is because when we're competing against things like EMC Avamar, we need to have some kind of metric to understand what kind of reduction we're going to get from client side.
Yep, that's one of the things that we're actually working on, Don, and any information that you could help us out with, that would be great.
Okay, very good. Thanks. I guess we'll check and see if there's other questions now before we move on.
Sure.
Operator, are there any additional questions?
One more question just came in from Jit Pal. Your line is open.
Okay. Hey, Tom. Question is about deduplication again.
Sure.
Does client-side deduplication support databases, applications, or just file systems?
When you say support it, it will work against any file on the system. So it will try to deduplicate it. Whether or not it will deduplicate efficiently is another question.
The question is, reframe I wanted to. Does it work with TDP, like SQL, like Exchange? That was my question. Or it supports only with backup archive client?
Well, that's a good question, and I'm afraid I'm going to have to take that one offline, too. I don't think there's anything specifically built in to the TDPs that have to do with deduplication. So
I'm pretty sure, Tom, that it supports the API client as well as the VA client.
Yeah, it's a separate process from either the backup archive process itself. So even though it's built into the client, as I said originally, it'll work on any file.
Okay, because I didn't see in the documentation mention of it supports any TDP or any API.
Well,
it's just very
not,
well.
Yeah, that's because it's not actually part of that. But Don, do you have a specific answer to whether or not it is supported with TDPs? I can't think of any statement that's come out one way or the other on that.
I'm fairly certain it's supported for both, but let me check on it, and I'll see if I'll have an answer for the end of the call.
Okay, great.
Thank you very much.
And once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please dial star then one at this time.
Okay, let's go ahead and move on, and let's leave the lines open as we go through this next section. Everybody is being great and keeping their phones on mute, so everything is real quiet. And as we go through here, if you have a question, go ahead and, what was it, star one that they should press if they have a question?
Right, I have their lines muted now. Did you want me to open them so they can mute them themselves?
Or
just leave it the way it is?
Quiet. I see. Yeah, let's leave it the way it is. If you have a question, go ahead and just do the star one, and we'll take it as they come in. So let's move on to this a worksheet that I've been working on for several years now. I call it the TSM Sizer. I have to caution that this is not an official TSM utility or tool. This is something that I work on pretty much on an ad hoc basis, and it's one of the reasons why we're kind of holding off sending it out in mass right now. We're trying to figure out if there's any legal ramifications to this. All it is an Excel spreadsheet, as I said, and it's just kind of a glorified calculator. You'll see how it works here in just a minute. But the reason why that I created it, it's just a quick way to add up these numbers to figure out how much space we're going to have in a storage pool. I've added a lot of defaults into it so that if someone's not really familiar with a lot of the idiosyncrasies of TSM, it gives you some aids in doing that. So it'll quickly calculate the disk and tape storage pools. It also gives you some idea of the database and recovery log requirements that you're going to need for the number of cartridges, and a couple of other things that would be useful. It includes the most recent, hopefully, tape devices and those the feeds and speeds for those, the amount of space that, you know, their density and the speed in which that they work with. So that's handy to have it at your fingertips. And it provides ballpark values for disk, tape, and network in terms of throughputs. Now, I have to emphasize the word ballpark. Many times, if I'm in the same order of magnitude, I'm pretty happy with the results of the sizer, especially when we're talking about a brand-new installation. And let me say at this point, if a customer already has a TSM server, it's much better to use either operational reports or the new reporting system for version 6 to gather information in terms of the size. In fact, there's a there's an SQL select statement that's part of the sizing or the new pricing model that should be used if a customer already has a TSM installation. So this is really a best guess when you're starting off fresh with a customer that doesn't have TSM. It's a difficult effort to do this. So that's the reason why we use this worksheet. Now, the disadvantage of using this worksheet is it's somewhat fragile in that if you delete an entire row that has some formulas in it, you may damage the worksheet beyond repair. So normally you don't want to go in and remove rows or especially columns, because there's probably formulas in there that will be needed. Now, the way that Excel works, it's usually pretty good. Let's say if you delete a row, let's say if you went in and you deleted a row, and we'll see it in a second. There's several rows that are exactly the same, and they're all in relation to each other. They're directly related. The one below is related to the one above. If you delete one of those, Excel is really good at recalculating all the references so that the formulas still work just fine. However, what it's not good at is translating those changes back to the macros. So there's a couple of macros that can be used within the worksheet that doesn't have any knowledge if you delete or add rows or columns. So that's why I ask people to try avoid that. So moving on, let's talk about a couple other things. Copying and pasting data from one worksheet to another can be dangerous because every cell within Excel has a lot of different characteristics, the first one being what you see is the value. Okay, and it could be zero or it could be blank, or it could have either some numerical or alphabetic value in there. But along with that, there are formulas, there are format characteristics, there are comments, and many other things that could be associated with that cell that when you copy from one to another are probably dragged over. Now, there's something within Excel. If you take a look at an Excel worksheet, on the menu item Edit, under that there's a Paste and a Paste Special. And that's one way that if you copy data from one worksheet to another, I would recommend you use this Paste Special feature so that you only paste in the values that you need from one worksheet to another. And finally, one of the worst things that you can do is when you copy from one to a worksheet to another, it actually creates a link. So Excel thinks that, oh, I'm going to need that data from that first worksheet so that subsequently, if you open up your second worksheet, it's going to try and open up the first worksheet and get that data that you copied over to see if it's changed. So it can be messy. So you have to be careful about that. If you run into that, find an Excel person that can explain how to get rid of it. What you have to do is you have to look for the name of that worksheet, and you can find that fairly easily. Okay, other gotchas within a worksheet. Looks like I already covered that part. And the second bullet here, if you see any of these are error conditions, it probably means that worksheet has been damaged. Now, the exception is, well, actually, there are no exceptions in this case, and I'll talk about that in just a minute. That second one where I say the divide by zero, there is an exception to that. I'll talk about that in the future. Okay, now if you move to the slide that actually shows a picture of the TSM sizer, if you've been around for a while and if you've used the TSM sizer in the past, version 5, the top banner was yellow, so if you have an old sizer that was yellow, it still may be good for sizing version 5, but probably not good for version 6. So with version 6, change the color to purple up there on the header just to make it real obvious what we're working with. Now, also, in comparison to other sizers, I've really reduced the number of pieces of information that you need in order to make this work. So let's go through the first couple of sections here, and I moved on to the next slide so that we're showing row number 3 specifically. That's the first row that you're going to fill out, and that contains, you know, the date of whatever you want this document to have, the customer name, the name of the TSM server, because keep in mind this worksheet relates to a single instance of a particular TSM server. So you really can't use this to represent multiple TSM servers. There's a space there or a slot there that you need to enter in the type of tape device that you're going to be using, the backup window, and this is the backup window for the TSM server. So if your backups start at 6 o'clock in the evening and they run till 6 o'clock in the morning, then you've got a backup window of 12 hours, and that's what's represented there. And the next thing is your projected yearly growth, and the default I have is 25%. Now, in the last 5 years or maybe a little bit longer, when disk all of a sudden, the price took a nosedive and it got really cheap, that projected growth went from 10 to 25% to 25 to 50 and even more. So that's one thing that you really want to query your customers on, to make sure that they understand what their growth is for from year to year or even during the year. Remember, with incremental forever, it's only going to back up files that have changed or new files. So anything new that's added to the client is going to get backed up, and it's going to add to the storage pool. Now, finally on here, the column L, days on disk, that's just that. If you have a disk storage pool and you're sending data to disk, how many days do you expect that to stay on the disk? Now, in most of the cases, that number is 1. It's going to stay on disk until it gets migrated to tape. However, we're seeing a lot more requirements to keep multiple days on disk. Now, this does not refer to VTL, which ultimately, of course, is disk, but in terms of the sizer, I treat the VTL pretty much just like a tape, another regular tape device. So this does not have anything to do with a VTL. Okay, let's go down to the next section, which is your client section. And over on the left there on the column A, those rows 5 through 1009 represent, each row is going to represent a particular client, or it could represent a group of clients, or it could represent a part of a client, say a file space of a client. So first of all, it could represent a single client, and then everything pretty much makes sense as we go through. If you have, say, 50 Windows machines that are workstations, you could represent all of those 50 workstations on a single line, as long as they all have pretty much the same data characteristics, you know, small files, mixed files, that sort of thing. Or you could, let's say you have a machine that you've got a terabyte and 200 gigabytes is file system data and 800 gigabytes are large files and represent a database. So those two data sets are really different in terms of their characteristics, in terms of the number of files they're going to represent, which goes directly to sizing the TSM database requirement. So you may want to split those two file spaces up, and in that case, you could say in row number 5, you could say client 1 file system, and then on row 6, you could say client 1 database, and you could separate them that way. So So remember, in the end, we're just adding up a bunch of numbers to figure out a gross number for either the amount of disc you need or the amount of tape you need. Now let's go across the rest of the requirements that you need, and these are all things that you need to either size it manually or to do it with this tool. The first thing is the percent of data change. Now this only relates to incremental backups, and you can see that some of those rows are grayed out. And if you see something grayed out, it just means that it's ignored in terms of this worksheet. In the case of, let's say, row number 6, we see it's grayed out, and when we go over to row number E, where it says incremental forever, it says no. So that means it represents a full backup. And you can also notice on row number 4, column number E, incremental forever, there's a little red triangle in the upper right-hand corner. That indicates that there's a comment. So when you fly your mouse over that, a little comment box will pop up anywhere there's a red triangle, and it'll give you some information about what that represents. So that gives you some help on what you might expect from that row or column. So incremental forever means yes, it's incremental forever. No, it's a full backup. You could also call that an image backup or a full volume backup. So it means that it's going to back up everything that's associated with that file. Okay, let's back up here. Row number C is the client disk. That's the amount of disk that's used on that client or the group of clients that's represented. So that's how much data is going to be managed by TSM for that given row, whether it be a client, a group of clients, or a file space. The next one is number of retention days. You can think of that as number of versions. And let's talk about the difference between retention and versions in this case. Let's say you have a business requirement to keep 3 versions. And you also have a business requirement to keep those 3 versions for 30 days. Okay. If you're doing daily backups, and so let's say you're doing Monday through Friday daily backups, and those individual files are changing fairly frequently. So let's say over the 5 days, a particular file changes 3 times. Well, in a single week, you've already generated 3 versions of that file. So if you want to keep 30 days worth of that file, then you have to think about the characteristic of that data. Now, I know this is getting down to the nitty-gritty, but you can see that you can't this is why I say you can't confuse whether or not you have the availability of any given file to the size, so the amount of space required. So let's say if you really had the requirement of keeping files for 30 days and you wanted to keep the last 3 versions, the most recent versions, then you really have to think about the characteristic of the data. So it can be somewhat complicated. All right, moving on to F, number of storage pool copies. This has to do with once the data is in a storage pool and you do a backup storage pool, how many of those copies are you going to keep? Now, typically, you're going to have a storage pool copy on site, and you're going to have at least one storage pool copy off-site. So in this case, that would be represented by the number 2. That's the copy. That doesn't include the original storage pool. Okay, average file size is pretty simple. It's either small, mixed, or large. And that can be adjusted on the tab that we're going to see in a minute, advanced settings. So, again, this is important in terms of judging the size of the TSM database and archive logs. So you need to have some guess, if nothing else, whether or not there are small files or small or large files. So keep that in mind. Are you doing client compression? Yes or no. Are you doing TSM deduplication? Yes or no. And that really refers to either client side or server side. This does not affect the disk pool. It's only for the tape pool. Making a note to myself here. Okay, and then you have the ability to select your primary storage pool, your next storage pool, your copy storage pool, and your active data pool, whether or not you're going to disk, tape, or VTL. Now, also I want to point out, you see a couple of rows there that are marked in yellow. What yellow signifies is it just brings your attention to that, saying, hey, is this something that's right? Because what we see here is a primary storage pool marked as tape, and then also a next storage pool that's also marked as tape. Now, to the worksheet here, that's saying that you have two separate tape storage pools, and it's going to count the data twice. So if that's what you want, then you want to put tape and tape in under the next. If it's not what you want, then you would just use the, or you would leave the next storage pool, you would leave that cell as blank, and then it would only count the data once to go in the library. Okay, I just moved on to the next sheet where we have a couple of red circles there, and I already talked about over on the left why those are gray and over on the right why those are yellow. So I'm going to move on to the next sheet, which if you'll notice in the lower left-hand corner, next to our little SafeMan logo there, which I resurrected just for the sizer. The second tab in the sheet is labeled Storage Totals, and then up above that you'll see that red circle, and then over to the left it's labeled Total Primary Pool Terabytes. Now, if all you're concerned about is the pricing model, you're done. You fill out the first sheet, and then you flip over to this, and that'll tell you how many terabytes we're estimating, and I emphasize the word estimate, will be in your primary pool. So in this case, it's about 8 terabytes of data in the primary pool. So it's not in the disk pool unless there is no tape pool. Or if the data never migrates to a tape pool, then the disk is considered a primary pool, and that's what you want to count. But the sizer will take that into account. So if that's all you're doing, you're good to go. I have a couple other sheets I want to show you here. Let's see. The next one just shows you that you've got information that tell you the amount of the daily disk pool size over there under the year 2010. You can see that I take this out 10 years. However, anything more than a couple years is really a guesstimate. Even going out a couple of years is iffy. And the way that I do that is merely by that growth factor. So it's a simple calculation of how much do you have the first year, and then multiply that by 1.25 if your growth rate is 25%. So that's a simple calculation there. But what it does kind of give you a reality check in terms of how fast data can grow given a growth rate. So I think it's valuable to take a look at that, if nothing more, as a sanity check. So going down row A, you got your yearly primary disc pool, and as you can see, this is zero because we're not keeping anything in the disc pool. Everything is being migrated to tape, and that's why that's zero. The next one is your yearly primary tape pool. That includes all the versions and the database backups and all of that. The next one, if you have an active data pool, that represents the active data for all of the clients that are included in the active data pool. Yearly copy pools, in this case, you can see that it's a little bit more than, or it's about double the yearly tape pool, and it's based on the number of storage pool copies that you're going to keep. Then the next one is the number of cartridges that you're going to need. And this is based on the amount of data in your yearly tape pool and the copy pools and the type of tape device that you're using. So that is important to have those three pieces of information. And the next slide just moves over to that year, 2010, the current year. So I just wanted to show you that that's the information there. Now, the next slide, the red circle drops down to the TSM database size in row 11. That represents, now you can see, for the first year, it's going to be 4 gig because we don't have very many clients there. And the second row there, 12, row number 12 shows that the number of TSM servers based on the size that you select for a basic TSM server. Now take your attention over to column number L. That's where you can change that number. So if right now it was set to 400 when I took this screenshot, so that means the TSM server size will get up to 400 before row number 12 tells you to go to the next larger size. So that's just a quick, easy way to kind of see how many TSM servers you're going to need over the years. Okay, the next one is your log slot size, and that, again, is the active log and the archive log for version 6. And all of these numbers typically are in gigabytes. The only difference there is that row number 9 where it specifically says it's terabytes. Let's see. The tape drive hours per day, in this case, let's say if that number was 10 and you had 10 tape drives, that means you could do this amount of work in 1 hour. And so that's the way that number works. If you had one tape drive, it would take you 10 hours. So, let's see. Then finally, I just went down to the next slide. LAN bandwidth, SAN bandwidth, disk bandwidth, that's the bandwidth in, and in this case, it's in megabits per second, and that number can be changed. Over on the right, again, on column L, you can change that to different units, kilobytes per second, gigabytes per hour. There's a couple of selections there that you can judge the bandwidth that you're going to need. And this is the bandwidth of the network all the way from the client to the server, whether it be the LAN, so for the Ethernet, or whether it be a SAN, you know, if you're using LAN-free backup with a storage agent. And then the next slide just points out that column number L. All right, moving on to the next slide, this points out the advanced settings tabs, and I have that caution there. If you're not very familiar with this, don't even visit this page. It'll just confuse you because it confuses me. time to time. This is just where I keep track of things like you can see the different types of tape devices, their capacities, their native throughput. One thing that can be changed there is the hardware compression. See in column E, if you absolutely know that the hardware is only compressing your data at one time, you can make a change there. If you know that it's compressing three times, if you're getting 3x, then you can change it here. Typically, if you use 2x, that's usually good in most cases. So only visit this page, take a look at it if you really want to get into using the sizer and see the different things that you could possibly change, but only change it if you're really comfortable with it. The next tab, which I've labeled Converter, is just a scratch pad for you to use if customers are, like, say, giving you units that you're not familiar with. So let's say it gives you megabytes per second, and you're used to dealing with gigabytes per second or gigabytes per hour. There's a way in the white area that you can put in a value, and then over on the right yellow area, it'll spit out some information and just do a quick calculation there. Again, just a scratch pad. That isn't none of this information gets put into the sizer output. This is only for your information. And then finally, over on the documentation tab, it gives you some basic methodology for sizing. For instance, down there on row number 13, there's the basic calculation, D representing the amount of disk. You know, that plus, again, the amount of disk times the change rate, times the number of versions minus one. And the reason why you've done that is because that first D that we added in there represents the first copy. So that's the basic calculation that you do for incremental backups if you're really interested in that kind of nitty-gritty type information. Now, let me show you some how the macros work on the worksheet. The first one, back on the first tab, storage entries, it says clear data, add default. Now when you press this button, I want you to keep two things in mind. And I've moved on to the next slide, which shows that red circle over around A2 where it says date. You can see that that cell is selected. So before you press the clear data button, select a row where you want things to be deleted. So if you select either row 1, 2, or 3, it's only going to affect row 3 because that's the one that gets changed. So the other thing that's going to happen when you push that button, it's going to pop up a message window that says you really want to clear the system data, and that's either yes or no. So you got a chance to opt out of that if you pushed it by mistake. But if you do say yes, then you can see that I blanked out some of the cells, and what I've done is inserted some basic defaults, and those defaults are the current date, the backup window of 12 hours, a projected growth of 25%, and the number of days on disk as 1. Now, you can see that the tape drive cell is red, and that means you better fill this in, otherwise nothing's going to work. So you're going to see a lot of those divide by 0 errors, and that's why there's an exception on that page previously that we saw. Now, moving on to the next slide, you can see that F3, the tape drive cell, it has a drop-down box, so you can go in there and just select the tape drive that you want. And I caution you to use the drop-down where available. You can type in the values in there, but you have to type it in exactly as I have it represented. Otherwise, the worksheet won't recognize it. It'll think it's blank. So use the drop-down where it's necessary. You know, I also have those down there for the average file size, compression, deduplication. All of those cells down there can be filled in with a drop-down list just to make sure that, say, under client client compression, you don't put a zero or let's say a one for yes. So we have to make it pretty bulletproof. Or that's the one way that I've tried to make it somewhat bulletproof. So let's see. Let's move on to the next slide. If you want to erase, let's say you're starting out fresh with a new worksheet and you want to delete, or you make a mistake and you want to go back and start over, you can see there on row number 5, A5, that row is, or that particular cell is selected. So when I press the button, again, it's going to ask me, but this time it says, do you want to clear the client data? And that's either yes or no. And I'm going to, I just moved down to the next slide, which you will see is performance totals. And we're going to skip that for now because we're not going to talk about that information in this presentation. And I'm going to move on to... let's see, the next slide is performance entries. And again, I'm not going to, we're not going to go over performance entries or performance totals because that really has nothing to do with the pricing model. So we're going to skip past that. And let's see, moving on. Let's see, I'm now on the performance totals tab. And I'm all the way to the summary page, and let's just go over these in terms of summary. You have to get good information about the clients that are being backed up. You know, remember garbage in, garbage out. If you just don't make any effort at all to get good information, then the type of output that you're going to get is pretty meaningless. Also, a word about the defaults that I use, you know, please, I put them in there if you absolutely have no other idea of what to use. But again, you know, that's a default, and it may have nothing to do with what the real situation is at your customer. So you only use that as a case of last resorts. so that the assumptions, you're going to have to make assumptions because the customer and you aren't going to know all the information. So you're going to have to make them, but make good assumptions. And finally, make sure that all of the components, remember, you know, disk on the client side, the network, the disk on the server side, the tape, all of those things have to be sized, so don't forget any one of them. So let's go ahead and then open it up again. Any other questions on what we've seen over the last few minutes?
And Tom, while we're... I'm sorry, go ahead.
If you'd like to ask a question at this time, please dial star then one.
And Tom, while we're waiting for questions, there was a question earlier about the client-side dedupe and whether it supported the TDPs, so TSM for Mail database. It does support them, so the API client is fully supported. The thing you had mentioned earlier about performance is accurate. Right now, the default setting for a large object is around 300 gigabytes in size, and I think if you exceed 700, then it's not supported. In other words, the using the API client for client-side dedupe is probably supported up to 700 gigabytes, and then beyond that, it's not supported. So right now, 300 is the default maximum size, and 700 is the limit.
Great, thanks, Don. And remember, keep in mind that term API that refers directly to the what we call the TDPs, which again, it's kind of an antiquated term, but I think everybody knows what we mean by that. So the data protection modules that come with TSM use the API, so that's why that's important. Anything else?
Operator, any questions at this time?
We do have another question from Jit Pal. Your line is open.
Hey, Don and Tom, thank you for finding out it supports TDP supports DDP supported for TDP. I have a question about this sizer. Where to get this Excel spreadsheet? Looks very good, very promising. It will help us in front of customer for sizing the TSM environment, but I don't know how to download or where to get this.
Yeah, we're working out those details, and we'll let you know. And if you notice from the presentation, I have marked here on the first page. Actually, it's on should be on every page. It says IBM Confidential.
Mm-hmm.
We try not to ever. You know, let one of these out to customers directly because we don't want somebody using this against us. Or, for instance, again, because this is such a kind of an estimate, you can't use it after the fact by saying, well, you projected that I was going to use this much space and I actually used 50% more than that. If I was within 50%, I'm pretty happy because we're dealing with some pretty gross assumptions to begin with. Even if you just think about how much space on each disk, if you can get a customer to tell you that, you'll be doing good. And then whether or not that customer really knows what's on that particular client or how much actual space. Let's say they know they've got 100 gig of disk, how much of that 100 gig is actually used? So, you know, and then when you think about, okay, what's the percentage of change? These are all assumptions that we're all making, and so we have to be really careful and kind of keep this information close to our vest and use it only where absolutely necessary.
Okay. Yeah, this is very helpful, actually. So do you think you means partners will be notified when it is available?
I'm going to let Dawn answer that question.
Yeah, so I think, Tom, if it's okay, why don't you send either Tom Heppner, or you can send it to myself, Don Dischinger. Send us an email and let us know who the sizer is for, whether it's for a business partner or IBM internal. We've got no problem providing this internally in IBM. I think what Tom's referring to is to what extent we can send this information out to the business partners in the channel. So just let us know who needs it and send us one of us an email, and we'll follow up with you directly as soon as we get an answer.
Do you mind mentioning your email so that?
Yes, my email address is Don D-O-N dot Dischinger D-I-S-H-I-N-G-E-R at us.ibm.com.
And mine is HEP, that's H-E-P at us.ibm.com.
Just HEP at us.ibm.com?
That's it, and that's
okay.
Directly in relation to my age.
Thank you, guys. Thank you very much.
And we do not have any further questions.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you, Tom, for taking us through the sizer. Certainly, if anyone's still on and has any questions, further questions for regarding the sizers, you can contact Tom directly, or if you have any questions around sales or licensing, regarding capacity, you can certainly contact me, Don Dischinger. I'm the worldwide sales leader for Tibley Storage. And with that, we'll end today's call. Thanks again, everyone, for attending.
Thank you for participating in today's call. You may disconnect at this time.